Hello, it's Monday the 12th of July and welcome to another edition of Career 24. I'm your host, Kwon Jang-woo. The toughest social distancing measures have taken effect in the Seoul metro area as the fourth wave of the COVID-19 pandemic continues to gather pace. We'll have the latest updates in our news briefing shortly. Last week, South Korea's spy agency revealed that a cyber attack on a state-run nuclear think tank was likely carried out by North Korea. We'll talk to some experts about the attack, as well as discuss South Korea's cyber defense readiness. And then today, as we lead up to the Tokyo 2020 Olympics, we begin a new daily segment called Going for Gold, previewing the games and bringing you the latest updates. We'll have all that and more up next. Level 4 social distancing under the new scheme fell into place in the capital, Seoul and surrounding areas, where it will remain for the next 2 weeks. This as demand for the COVID-19 vaccine appears to be at fever pitch. People in their late 50s were up overnight trying to make their online reservations, and many walked away disappointed. To discuss this as well as other headlines of the day, we're joined in the studio by KBS World Radio news editor Eunice Kim. Hello, Eunice.
Happy Monday, Jang-ho.
Happy Monday to you too. So, how did the first day of level 4 social distancing go today?
Yeah, the nation, and specifically the Seoul metro region, is back in the all alert mode as the country continues to log daily cases over the 1,000 level. Perhaps the biggest adjustment those in the capital region are making today is the new restriction of no more than 2 people meeting at once after the hour of 6 p.m. And this applies apparently for taxi rides as well. So we are hearing of many owner-run restaurants in the capital region considering whether they should just give up serving dinner for the time being, as lunch crowds also slim down on order from companies to replace off-site meetings with phone or video calls. To remind you of some of the other curbs coming into play through at least July 25th in Seoul, Incheon, and Gyeonggi Province, schools will revert to online-only classes. Places of worship will also go online. Public events and demonstrations are generally banned. Nighttime entertainment facilities such as clubs and bars remain shuttered, and sports games will have no spectators. Generally, people are being urged to avoid unnecessary social contact so that quarantine officials can get a handle on the rising infection numbers as soon as possible in this fourth pandemic wave.
Meanwhile, President Moon Jae-in led a meeting on quarantine inspection this Monday with the government heads of Seoul, Incheon, and Gyeonggi Province, as well as relevant ministry officials. So what did he say?
Well, he characterized the level 4 curbs as the strongest possible measures to tackle this COVID-19 surge in a short period of time without introducing a full lockdown. He said the goal is to be in and out as fast as possible, and he urged the public for their full cooperation, pausing their social life for the time being. President Moon, chairing that special quarantine inspection meeting, said the current situation represents the biggest crisis since the start of the outbreak for the country, and the tough distancing curbs aim to prevent even greater damage and losses. He expressed his apologies for having to ask for more public patience and promised the government would do what it can to help pad the business losses being incurred by the people.
Now, this all comes as the country logged daily infection figures in the 4 digits right through the weekend.
Yeah, that's correct. Today's log was the lowest we've had in 6 days. As the KDCA said, 1,100 COVID-19 cases were detected throughout the 24-hour period of Sunday. The logs over the weekend remained above 1,300 as more people did get tested despite it being a weekend. To further break down that 1,100 number, 37 were infections from overseas and the rest were domestic transmissions, of which over 72% came from the capital region, including 402 cases in Seoul and 322 in Gyeonggi Province. Thankfully, despite these higher figures, serious cases remain relatively low, thanks in part to the progress in vaccinating the most vulnerable and those in their 60s and older. But it also means that those in their 20s and 30s represent now a higher ratio in the new infections, 42% compared to the 26% they made up in the third pandemic wave. KDCA Commissioner Chung Eun-kyung, following that special quarantine inspection meeting, said if the virus reproduction rate remains at about what it is now, 1.22, mathematical modeling puts new daily cases cases in the middle of next month, August, at upwards of 2,331. And from that point, she suspects that it could be projected to fall, possibly into the 600s by month's end.
Meanwhile, how's the nation doing on the vaccination front?
Yeah, great question. Supply is far outstripping demand. Online registrations for those between 55 and 59 years old attracted much late-night traffic. Local reports showing screen grabs of 800,000 people waiting online to get through at 3 a.m. So it wasn't a surprise that the reserve supply for the end-of-month inoculations ran out before this day was done. There is one more reservation period for that age group for the first week of August, and vaccine authorities say this will also close when the allotted supply of the Moderna vaccine is all claimed for. Meanwhile, those in their 50s, early 50s, that is 50 to 54, will have their chance to reserve shots from July 19th through 24th, that's next week, for inoculations in August.
Let's move on to other headlines now. The registration period for preliminary candidates for the March 2022 presidential election has officially begun. Can you tell us more?
That's correct. The National Election Commission began receiving applications for preliminary candidates on Monday, which is 240 days ahead of the March presidential election. It will run through February 12th of next year. Candidates are allowed to officially begin their campaigns only after registering, including setting up an office and hiring up to 10 paid employees. Presidential hopeful Yoon Suk-yeol registered as a preliminary candidate on Monday, becoming the first to do so among potential candidates to represent the opposition. And through his spokesperson, Yoon pledged to create a country together with the public where fairness and common sense are set right before expressing pride in the country built through people's blood and sweat.
Meanwhile, the ruling Democratic Party narrowed down its list of presidential contenders to 6 in the first round of its party primary. So, Eunice, who made the cut?
Okay, so while following two opinion polls, the party had run from Friday to Sunday, the Democratic Party's Election Management Committee announced on Sunday that the 6 contenders moving on with the Liberal Party will be former Justice Minister Choo Mi-ae, Gyeonggi Province Governor Lee Jae-myung, former Prime Ministers Jung Se-kyun and Lee Nak-yeon, as well as lawmakers Park Young-jin and Kim Doo-kwon. Meanwhile, a separate poll, this one by the Korea Society Opinion and Institute, has found that support for the former ruling Democratic Party chairman Lee Nak-yeon is seeing a boost among leading hopefuls for next year's race, as his top competitors Yoon Suk-yeol and Lee Jae-myung had their leads narrow. The survey on some 1,000 adults across the country on Friday and Saturday had 18.1% say that they are for the former prime minister, which is up 5.9 percentage points from the previous week. This survey had a confidence level of 95% with a margin of error of plus or minus 3.1%. percentage points.
And in possibly encouraging news for the ruling Democratic Party, President Moon Jae-in's approval rating has also seen a rebound in a new poll.
Yeah, Real Meter is saying its latest survey has found President Moon Jae-in's approval rating recovering to the 40% range. This is for the first time since March, or 18 weeks. In its poll of some 2,500 adults nationwide from last Monday through Friday, 41.1% said they thought Moon was doing a good job, although nearly 55% still had a negative assessment. Now, public support for the ruling Democratic Party also saw a boost. Its approval rating was up 3.3 percentage points from the previous week at 32.9%. This survey, commissioned by local cable network YTN, had a confidence level of 95% with a margin of error of plus or minus 2 percentage points.
We'll leave it there for our news briefing today. Thank you for those updates.
You bet.
Coming up next, in-depth news analysis. You're listening to Korea 24 from KBS World Radio.
South Korea's National Intelligence Service revealed to a parliamentary committee last week that the state-run Korea Atomic Energy Research Institute was exposed to a cyber attack for 12 days, with the likely perpetrators thought to be North Korea. According to two lawmakers from the committee, Kim Byung-gi from the ruling Democratic Party and Ha Tae-kyung from the main opposition People Power Party, the NIS said they believe the hackers were not able to access material on key technologies, but they also could not figure out what material might have been leaked. The length of the exposure and the uncertainty about what might have been accessed has led to concerns about South Korea's cyber defense capabilities, especially as this seems to be the latest in a continuing series of attacks by the North Korean regime. To talk about the latest hacking incident and cyber threats from North Korea and beyond, we have two expert guests joining us on the line. First, we have Kim Kyung-jin, who is a senior managing director and head of cybersecurity for the Asia-Pacific region at FTI Consulting. Hello, Mr. Kim. Thank you for speaking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And we also have on the line Cho Dong-yeon, assistant professor at the Department of Military Studies at Seogyeong University. She is also the director of the university's Center for Future Defense Technology and Entrepreneurship. Welcome to the show, Professor Cho.
Oh, thank you for having me too.
So it was South Korea's Nuclear Research Institute, the Korea Atomic Energy Research Institute, that was exposed to the cyber attack, likely linked by North Korea, for 12 days. Mr. Kim, what were your thoughts when you heard about this latest incident?
Yeah, I mean, this is nothing new. This is what I'm used to when I work for U.S. government, and this is a constant battle between the bad guys and the good guys, right? And many countries like are vulnerable to cyber attacks, including the United States, who is currently the number one victim when it comes to significant cyber attacks. However, South Korea is not exempt from this either, right? South Korea is is as vulnerable as other developed countries like Singapore, Japan, and Taiwan. And yes, South Korea has seen its share of malicious attack in the past. Just to name a few, we have Ministry of National Defense hacked major banks and the Korea Hydro Nuclear Power Plant a few years back. And when I worked the Pyeongchang Olympics 2018, and the recent attack against the Atomic Energy Research Institute, as you mentioned, allegedly North Korean hackers had approximately 12 days. That is a very long time for the hackers to cause some serious damage, and that's more than enough time for nation-state actors like North Korea, RGB, to cause some serious damage and exfiltrate a significant amount of sensitive data. And when we say sensitive data, we're talking about R&D and the sensitive technology, nuclear reactor, and the communication, and any future plans. And the this is absolutely true to many of organizations sometimes that don't even realize they are hacked, right? And government entities are not exempt from this either. Eventually, they will find out they've been hacked. By this time, it's a little too late, right? Cyber espionage are very serious, and a lot is on the line, right? And recently, FBI Director Chris Wray, he sounded alarm and compared cyber attacks on America to 9/11 terrorist attack, right? So we all need to do a better job collectively in defending our data, and it's our obligation.
Right, so nothing new, but the 12 days exposure has caused alarm for Mr. Kim. Professor Chul, what about you? What did you make of this incident?
Yeah, I generally agree with the Mr. Kim said. But the special attention should be pointed out in two respects, I think. So first, of course, military aspect. We need to conduct U.S. and RA combined military exercises as well as joint military exercises. And cyber space and cognitive domain have been really getting importance in this recent warfare and also future warfare as well. So, of course, the continuity remains there, but the importance of the significance of this a series of cyber attack has been, I think, really getting significant. And then second one is commercial sector. For example, KAI, one of the aerospace maker in South Korea, has been attacked, presumably by North Korea. And this one is not incident is really great importance, but also in these days, we need to cooperate with a lot of different organizations and companies, especially in the aerospace and defense industry, right? And then the confidential information, if has been leaked, it will be really difficult for South Korea and also aerospace and defense industries to cooperate with the other foreign companies and organizations and countries. So this kind of impact of the a series of cyber attack is beyond just the military, but also the economy and technology. So I think also from the U.S. perspective, who has been conducting with the South Korea in combined exercises, they need to worry about this information leak, as well as some kind of R&D effort with the South Korean companies, as Mr. Kim mentioned.
Right, so it's not just about the security data that's been perhaps hacked, but it's about how that might affect future cooperation with other countries that might be a consideration. Now, as you've both mentioned, this attack on the Nuclear Research Institute isn't the only one that South Korea has seen in recent years. Lawmaker Ha Tae-kyung said that a separate investigation is underway after the Korea Aerospace Industries, KAI, as Professor Chul mentioned, was allegedly a target in a cyber attack, likely by North Korea again. The KAI is the nation's sole aircraft manufacturer, and data on the KF-21 fighter jets are assumed to have been targeted. Daewoo Shipbuilding and Marine Engineering are also said to have been hacked, and they may have lost files on a submarine-launched ballistic missile or the Korean Vertical Launching System under development. Another institute, the Korea Aerospace Research Institute, which is engaged in development of rocket launches and satellites, also allegedly came under a North Korean cyber attack last year. Professor Chul, what do you make of these series of attacks? Some have suggested that this shows North Korea is looking to steal data to help them develop weapons.
So these kind of a series of cyber attacks, as Mr. Kim mentioned, is not different from the previous ones, I think. We cannot can be sure whether North Korea will develop new weapons based on the information they stole or attack. But definitely the actors, the RGB, whether it's RGB or GSD from North Korea, they definitely have an intention to use this information in the military, right? But the these days, I think the importance of this cyber attack and cyber incident is getting more related to the civil part as well. So they have been targeting for financial institutions. It's another source of money for North Korea, and they can use this money for military development. So anyway, direct or indirect, the actors for cyber attack from North Korea is from the leadership, Kim Jong-un. So I think under the Kim Jong-un's leadership, those information and the money will definitely go to the national objective for North Korea.
Mr. Kim, how certain can we be that the hackers were state-sponsored North Korean hackers? How do we check that, and how advanced are North Korean hackers?
You know, when we got to look at the totality of circumstances, right? And your question was, you know, how certain are we North Korea is behind this attack? But whenever FBI or investigative agency, they bring indictment against these cyber hackers, they have solid evidence, right? You got to be beyond reasonable doubt, and you have probable cause. For example, you know, when they come across evidence, it's not just hearsay from a witness, right? They need to have IP geolocations, and they need to have latitude and longitude, the location where it happened, and the what type of connection device they use. There are a lot of information they gather as well as known malware signatures, you know, Korean has been used. So when you put all those together and when you look at the historical events that the North Koreans were involved in, when you put all this evidence together, they are not certain, they are very confident that the North Koreans are behind these attacks, right? For example, when we look at the studies, all the investigations we conducted, we believe that, you know, Kim Suk-hee is behind this attack, and they are a well-known part of RGB, North Korea's military intelligence agencies, right? And these guys are highly skilled hackers within Bureau 121, and these guys already caused a serious breach against South Korea and the victims around the globe, mm. right? And the South Korea, Japan, and U.S. are their biggest targets. So when these victims, when they become victim of a major hacking incident, they collect and they analyze all this evidence, right? And they share this evidence among intelligence agencies. And when they bring the indictments against the hackers, it could be North Korean state-sponsored hackers or the Chinese, they are pretty certain that North Koreans are behind when they bring the indictments against these cyber hackers.
Hmm. Professor Chul, considering that the attack on the Korea Atomic Energy Research Institute was exposure for 12 days, could there be hacking cases that the government has been unaware of? How vulnerable is South Korea to hacking attacks?
I think we may, because South Korea has a well-earned reputation as a global information and communication technology leader in the world. That says we are, South Korea is very open society. So it means we have very, a kind of a vulnerability from the government to commercial sector. So we may, that's one thing. The other one is, I think, I just wanted to point out, so in terms of competition between the U.S. and China, the a series of cyber incidents presumably conducted by North Korea is related to the China or Russia or other third-party countries, and that it harms the combined capabilities between the U.S. and the ROC. But the thing is, South Korea has not developed well a kind of coalition type of cooperation in terms of cybersecurity globally. For example, Japan is making an effort to cooperate with Five Eyes, so-called Five Eyes Plus One. But South Korea yet has been developed those kind of coalition. As Mr. Kim said, the cyber front is quite global. Its impact and implication goes global, not only in the boundary of South Korea. So I think that's quite important to not just this recent cyber attack case, but the historically we can go back to the previous ones as well in this respect.
So, Mr. Kim, what lessons can we learn from these series of incidents? What more do you think South Korea needs to be doing to prevent hacking attacks?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, right? That's a million-dollar question. And it's a tough question, right? But we need to constantly stay vigilant. And according to many studies and articles, you know, there is a cyber attack, I want to say, every 30 seconds, right? So this is inevitable, but we need to do our due diligence to protect our crown jewels and our assets. And we cannot prevent this 100%, and we all know this. There is no silver bullet to this, right? However, we can protect ourselves and minimize the threat vectors by putting layers of countermeasures in place, And the when I say layers of countermeasures, there are a few steps, right? We need to have an incident response plan in place. We cannot put a plan together as you are dealing with an attack, right? Because your head will be spinning. If you are dealing with a ransomware, your data is exposed on dark web and the hackers are requesting $10 million and your regulators are coming down, right? So you can't prepare it as you go, right? You need to have a best practice in place and activate it as soon as the breach takes place, right? And this will help to minimize the business operational downtime tremendously, and it will help with the fast recovery. And you can be down for a few days versus a few weeks versus a few months, right? You could lose 10 grand versus millions of dollars, right? So you need to have a plan in place. Also, organizations need to run on the latest operating system, right? They need to deploy the latest updates and tools. And don't make it easy for hackers by operating on your legacy old system, right? It's very easy to hack into. They also need to conduct diligence annually to identify your vulnerabilities. You need to understand your assets and gaps to minimize the vulnerabilities. You can't protect what you don't know, right? And last thing is, one of the most important layer is training your employees, right? This is all common sense. I've been saying this, and the cyber experts have been saying this, but a lot of organizations don't listen until it's too late, right? We humans are the weakest link when it comes to defense layer, right? We need to arm our employees with proper tools and training so they can be better prepared and don't become the latest victim of cyber attack.
Professor Zhou, is there anything you would like to add? What more do you think South Korea needs to be doing?
I just to point out, so the not only South Korea military, but also globally, the military began to use more and more dual technology, right? So it's not only the Ministry of National Defense and its military caution and notice this kind of risks, but also the all the companies and startups even who develop this kind of technology, which will be used in the military, they need to also keep in mind these national security issues, cybersecurity issues, is really at risk, as Mr. Kim mentioned.
We'll leave it there. We've been speaking to Mr. Kim Kyung-jin from FTI Consulting and Professor Cho Dong-young from Seogyang University. Thank you both for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
The Tokyo 2020 Summer Olympic Games are just around the corner now. And to build up to that here on Korea 24, starting today, we have a new daily segment called Going for Gold. Here we'll give a preview of the games from now until July 23rd, and we'll talk about athletes and stories and events to look out for. And then when the torch is lit, we'll provide day-to-day coverage of the games, including South Korea's medal standings and more. Covering this will be a familiar voice for our regular listeners. Our staff editor, Mark Wilson Chair, has kindly taken a step back from his duties for Morning Edition Preview to go all in for our Olympic coverage. And he has joined us now in the studio. Mark, hello. It's great to see you.
Good to see you. I'm honored, but also really nervous. I really hope I can pull
sure
this off
and
do Korea justice. Yes.
Yeah, so Mark, less than 2 weeks away now, these games. It's been a long road getting here, but it's finally happening. To start us off this series, we want to perhaps get an overall general overview of the situation, a primer as such. So, Mark, where are we starting first?
Well, let's delve into the name itself, shall we? It is the 2020 Games, and it's the first Olympics ever to be postponed an entire year. This is, of course, due to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Both the International Olympic Committee and the Japanese government have pushed ahead to open the 2020 Games, albeit with special measures to combat the spread of COVID-19.
Right, these Olympics are being dubbed the COVID Games, of course. So what kind of measures are being taken to ensure everybody's safety?
Mm-hmm. Athletes and coaching staff, along with the media covering the games, will be quarantined inside so-called bubbles, both inside the athletes' village and stadiums. Socializing and group meals will be prohibited. Athletes will be tested daily for COVID-19, and they must leave Japan within 48 hours of their last event. Due to the pandemic, spectators will be barred from attending Olympic events in Tokyo and some neighboring prefectures. Some outlying venues will take in the limited amount of 10,000 local spectators. You talked about that on Korea Trending. However, since then, some of those venues that said they would take people in, they're closing their doors to spectators as well, so it's really good to keep up to date.
Right. Generally, it seems like it will be a spectator-free games. What that will do for the atmosphere is so hard to tell at the moment, especially for the opening ceremony as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on that note, Mark, the opening ceremony is always a highlight of the Olympics, and it's usually something that is kept under wraps until the event itself. But
That's right.
Do we know at the moment about the opening ceremony?
Well, it's going to be held on July 23rd, and it will take place in the new National Stadium in Tokyo, Shinjuku. Well, we don't know how much on how the Olympic flame will be lit. The show's overall theme will be expected to highlight Japan's recovery after the 2011 earthquake and subsequent tsunami, as well as humanity's efforts to overcome the COVID-19 pandemic. You'll get a chance to get a good look at the game's logo, consisting of a large ring made up of three kinds of rectangles representing countries, cultures, and ideals. You'll also be able to see the game's mascot, Mirai Towa, who dons the same pattern as the logo. He can teleport around. It's a pretty cool little guy. And it translates to the words future and eternity.
Right. Considering everything that Japan has gone through over the last 10 years and what the world has gone through over the year and a half, I think it could be quite an emotional opening ceremony as well. Let's move on to the actual sporting side of the event itself. It seems every Olympics now, there are new events added and some taken out.
Yeah.
Which events are out this year and which are included this time?
Well, baseball's back, which was excluded after the 2008 Olympic Games. And new events include karate, surfing, skateboarding, and sport climbing. Mixed team events that contains both male and female athletes will be added as well, including archery, judo, table tennis, and mixed relays, to name a few. Fencing, an event that South Korea has been a powerhouse in, will now have a total of 12 golds that they can get. This is a big deal because in the past games, only 10 out of the 12 events would be scheduled. So this time around, all 12 fencing golds are up for grabs, first time ever. Now, it was disappointing to learn that the 50-meter pistol event will be excluded, as Jin Jong-ol, a.k.a. South Korea's god of shooting, he's won back-to-back gold medals in that event. But Jin will still be competing in the 10-meter air pistol. He just made it for his record-breaking medal. Right now, he's tied with former archer Kim Soon-young for most Olympic medals by a South Korean athlete. So somebody to look out for.
Right. He's an incredible 41 years old and competing in his fifth Olympics.
Yeah.
Incredible. And he's a determined figure as ever. So definitely a name to look out for.
Mm-hmm.
And before we wrap up, can you tell us about some of Team Korea's goals at the Tokyo Olympics?
Well, to go for gold, obviously, Jang-ho. South Korea is actually aiming to grab at least 7 gold medals to rank 10th at the Games. It would be Team Korea's 5th consecutive time to be in the top 10 at a Summer Olympics. Two events to pay particular attention to is archery and taekwondo, both of which South Korea holds an outstanding medal record. According to securing gold would be a huge boost in morale as they're both scheduled earlier in the game. So big boost.
Yes, excitement slowly building. We are getting there, but I'm definitely getting excited. I don't know about you, Mark.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Mark, thank you for bringing us this first edition of Going for Gold. We appreciate it, and we look forward to the rest of your Olympic courage for the next month or so.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Korea 24 Stock and Forex Update. The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index rose 28.52 points, or 0.89%, on Monday to close at 3,246.47. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ also rose, gaining 5.71 points, or 0.55%, to close at 1,034.64. On the foreign exchange, the local currency strengthened 2.1 won against the dollar, ending the session at 1,147 won. You can check Korean stock and forex closings at world.kbs.co.kr.
It's time now for our daily segment, Korea Trending. This is where we take a look at some of the other news stories that have been trending online in Korea today. And for that, we have joining us on the line now, Walter Lee, who has those stories for us. Walter, hello.
Hello, Jungho. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. So what stories do you have for us today?
Okay, so for trending topics, we'll talk about how the mad rush to secure a COVID-19 vaccine locked up the application service. And we're going to talk about Seoul City's decision to tow illegally parked electric scooters. And we'll finally talk about Sir Richard Branson's successful and historic trip to the edge of space.
Okay, let's start with our first story then. Just earlier in news briefing, Eunice discussed with us how COVID-19 vaccinations for the 55 to 59 age group has been suspended as the supply has been completely exhausted. But apparently that isn't saying the half of it, as it was quite the mad rush to secure a reservation. Right, Walter?
Right, indeed. So many people scrambled to make reservations late through the night and early into the morning. It caused major server malfunctions on the application website. Straight out of the gate, when the online application service opened at the stroke of midnight on Monday, over 200,000 people were already trying to log onto the website. At one point, over 800,000 applicants logged on at the same time, causing the server problems that consequently shut the service for around 3 hours.
Wow, so we can clearly see how desperate people in Korea are to try and get a vaccine shot. Now, we mentioned earlier, every dose of this supply of Moderna COVID-19 vaccine has been reserved. When will inoculation begin for those who are able to secure their dose?
Okay, so inoculation will begin on July 26th and continue until August 7th at some 13,000 medical institutions across the nation.
And understand that this isn't the first time that this online application system shut down due to a massive influx of people trying to make their vaccine reservations.
No, you're right. So a few days ago, the website shut down for a couple of hours when accepting applications from some 380,000 teachers and daycare center workers eligible for the Pfizer vaccine.
Yes, with the fourth wave hitting the nation and the onset of the harshest social distancing restrictions that the nation has seen, it's becoming clear to most people that vaccines are the only way out, but the supply cannot match the demand at the moment, so people will have to be patient, but we can clearly see frustration is building. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to our second topic now. What else do you have for us today?
Okay, so Seoul City has announced it will begin towing away illegally parked electric scooters or e-scooters. This new measure is to help reduce the amount of rental scooters left in spots that could potentially cause inconvenience and disrupt traffic. The towing will begin first in 6 districts. This is including Songpa-gu, Mapo-gu, and Yeongdeungpo-gu, and will be expanded to the remaining 19 districts by July 15th. The city will levy a 40,000 won or $35 towing fee for each scooter and a 700 won storage fee for every 30 minutes a towed scooter remains in custody. These fees will be charged to the rental service. As of June, over 55 electric scooters from 14 service providers were in operation in Seoul.
Right, as e-scooters become more and more popular, they are also becoming a hazard as some are parked in dangerous areas. So do we have details about where we can and cannot park e-scooters, just to give our listeners in Korea a heads up?
Yeah, we do. So the central government has already designated 13 places where scooters cannot park, including bus stops and entrances to buildings. And certain areas have been designated as immediate tow-away zones, and they include places prone to traffic accidents, such as a subway station entrance, bus stops, taxi stops, and on top of a braille paving blocks for the visually impairments.
Right, I see. And I understand there's also a system where people can notify the city if they see an illegally parked e-scooter.
Yes, that's a good question. So the city government has started running a website for complaints, allowing citizens to scan QR codes on the scooters and type in its location. The complaints will be transmitted in real time to e-scooter rental services, giving them a 3-hour grace period to collect the scooter and avoid the fines.
So it will be a challenge for the rental companies to ensure people follow the rules, but it's also an important consideration that riders will need to take now as e-scooters become more popular. Mm-hmm. Let's turn to our final story now, and it seems the British billionaire entrepreneur Richard Branson has successfully reached the edge of space.
Right. So the space tourism firm Virgin Galactic has successfully taken its first passengers to space, including its founder, Sir Richard Branson. The flight came from nearly 17 years of development and over $1 billion of investment to Virgin Galactic. Branson said he has achieved his childhood dream, adding, "Nothing could prepare you for the view of Earth from space upon his landing."
Now, Branson's announcement came just hours after fellow billionaire Jeff Bezos told the world he would take to space on July 20th. And though Branson said it was just a coincidence, many experts believe otherwise. So it seems Branson is ahead of this particular space race. Can you tell us about the flight itself, Walter?
Yes, I agree. So the space tourism firm's spacecraft, VSS Unity, launched above the skies of New Mexico on Sunday local time. After being released by its mothership, the VMS Eve, the Unity fired its rocket engine and accelerated to faster than 3 times the speed of sound in a climb to the edge of space. Branson was accompanied by 3 employees of the spaceflight who could be seen enjoying their spacewalk in zero gravity. It reached an altitude of 86.1 kilometers or 53.5 miles before returning to land. But bring out the space tape measures, because depending on who you ask, that distance is or isn't in space. For instance, NASA, the U.S. Air Force, and the Federal Aviation Administration consider space to start past 80.4 kilometers. However, other organizations use the Kármán line at over 99 kilometers to mark where space begins, a line that Bezos plans to break in his flight.
Right, so there will be a debate about whether Branson did or didn't reach the edge of space. Okay, so when does Branson plan to begin commercial flights to space?
Well, his company is still testing its spacecraft system, aiming to begin commercial service by early 2022. Shortly after his successful flight, Branson announced there will be a sweepstakes to give 2 lucky winners a chance to go to space on board one of his company's first commercial space flights early next year. The company already has about 600 reservations for tickets on future flights, sold at prices between $200,000 and $250,000 each.
Right, so another small step for mankind and its billionaire business magnates. That is all for Korea Trending. Thank you for those stories, Walter, and we'll talk again soon.
See you soon.
Welcome back. We continue on now to Monday's Sports Roundup, our weekly segment looking at the latest Korean sporting updates. For that, we have joining us on the line our regular contributor for this segment, sports reporter Yoo Ji-ho from the Yonhap News Agency. Ji-ho, hope you're doing well.
Yeah, I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Now, we talked a little about the Olympics earlier today in our Going for Gold segment, but let's talk more about the Korean men's football team, because the details for the final tune-up matches coming up this week have been finalised, and it's an important chance for the coach Kim Ak-bum to get a look at his players, especially the late additions, before they head off to Japan. So, Ji-ho, can you set up those matches for us?
Yep, Korea will be playing 2 matches this week. First, it's against Argentina at 7:30 p.m. Tuesday, the town in Yongin, and then France at 8 p.m. Friday in Seoul. Unfortunately, both matches will be played without fans in the stands because of new social distancing rules in place in the capital region. But other than that, both Argentina and France, you know, they're both competing in the Olympics, should present enough of tough tests for Kim Ak-bum's team. France actually could potentially meet Korea again in the quarterfinals, as they're in Group A and Korea in Group B, so they're on the same side of the bracket. Argentina being in Group C, so Argentina and Korea could potentially meet in the semifinals if they go that far. Roster, you mentioned, that expanded from 18 to 22 a couple of weeks ago. Coach Kim is expected to give everybody some action over these 2 matches. And in a press conference earlier Monday, he talked about how every one of those 22 players will be ready to contribute when they get the call to take the pitch. So there's no really point of setting, quote unquote, best 11 at this point. He just wants everybody to be ready to contribute when their number is called. And, you know, during the early phases of preparation, he often spoke about whipping players into shape so that they could handle hot and scorching conditions in midsummer in Japan. But after the team was finalized, the focus shifted to more of on-field performances, namely playing better defense and be more efficient and effective with set pieces.
Right. Well, it's great to have such formidable opponents to face in these warm-up matches, as it will hopefully give them a better sense of what they could be facing in Japan. That's Tuesday, 7:30 p.m. Korea time against Argentina, and Friday, 8 p.m. against France. Okay, let's move away from the Olympics now and turn to baseball on the other side of the Pacific. The first half of the 2021 Major League season has come to an end, and there have been four Korean players that have enjoyed solid performances so far. Let's start with the two pitchers, Jiho, Ryu Hyun-jin and Kim Kwang-hyun. They're pretty much veterans in the majors now, so we would expect solid performances, but it's still encouraging to see, right?
Yeah, especially with Kim Kwang-hyun. He won his third straight start Sunday morning our time in Korea for the San Luis Cardinals as they shut down the Chicago Cubs 5-0. And, you know, Kim throwing six shutout innings, scattering just five singles and striking out seven. So he's 4-5 with a 3.11 ERA. He's a scoreless streak now sitting at 15 innings, and he appears to have put his early season back problems behind him. With Ryu Hyun-jin, he also won his final start before the break for the Toronto Blue Jays on Thursday morning, defeating the Baltimore Orioles for the third time to improve to 8-5 with a 3.56 ERA. He had been having some command issues with his changeup in recent starts, but in that game against the Orioles, that pitch really looked sharp. Even Ryu himself said afterwards that that was the best changeup he was throwing in recent starts. And I think both pitchers have strong foundations to build upon as they head into the second half of the season.
Indeed. Meanwhile, the two Korean hitters, Choi Ji-man and Kim Ah-sung, are in good position to reach the postseason come October as well. Their clubs have, in fact, done better than Toronto and St. Louis so far.
Yeah, so far, I mean, the Rays and Choi Ji-man, they're leading the AL wildcard race. They made the World Series last year. They're going to try to go back this year. You know, Choi, he missed the first month and a half of the season with the knee injury, but since coming back, he's been the typical, very solid on-base machine since getting back on the lineup. He's batting .252, but he's on-base, very impressive, .381 in 37 games. He's got three homers and 19 RBIs. Kim Ah-sung and the Padres, San Diego Padres, they're in second place in the NL wildcard race behind their division rival, LA Dodgers. Kim has been a versatile infielder. He's been able to play three positions, second base, third base, and shortstop, providing some occasional pop at the plate as well. Batting only .208, but does have five homers in 73 games. He's made 44 starts. Barring injuries to more regular players, I don't think Kim will likely get a lot of playing time going forward, but he's been making the most of the limited opportunities that he's been getting.
Right, and he's made some highlight reels as well with both his defensive and batting work, so that's been fun to see. So these four players enjoying a solid first half of the season in the majors. Okay, let's turn to the domestic league now, because a concerning situation is brewing in the KBO. A number of COVID-19 cases have been found, leading to a handful of games being cancelled over the last few days. Jiho, what more can you tell us?
Yeah, you know, over the past handful of days, three members of the NC Dinos and two more from the Doosan Bears have tested positive for COVID-19. So a bunch of games got canceled, and not just games involving these two teams directly. The Kia Tigers, who played the Bears early in the month, had their Saturday game canceled because everybody had to be tested from that team. So the league office met with the club general managers on Sunday to discuss, you know, their next step forward. The KBO cannot unilaterally suspend the season, but they can only do so after meeting with some club representatives and going things over. According to league protocols, if the teams have a few players short because of positive COVID-19 tests, they can fill some of those spots without dropping anybody to make room for them. So, I think there's a chance that the teams are going to look into those options to fill their roster spots. The league goes on an Olympic break starting next week until August the 9th. So, there's a little bit of a wiggle room, I think, if it comes down to whether to go ahead with the season or not.
Right, but still a concerning situation all round indeed. That is where we'll leave it for our Monday Sports Roundup. Thank you for bringing us those updates, Jiho, and we'll talk to you again next time.
Okay, thanks for having me.
And that's where we wrap up our show today. Thank you for staying with us. We'll be back same time tomorrow, so do join us again then. I've been your host, Kwon Jang-ho, and we hope you have a great day. Goodbye.